This is Biz. I'm a part-time working mom with a toddler son and a daughter who's a full-blown kid.
And I'm Teresa, a part-time working mom with two little boys and another on the way.
This is a show about life after giving life. Don't listen with your kids, because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, it's time once again to resolve to be resolute. Plus, Biz recovers from the holidays, Teresa wants to remind us about her great gift, and we talk to Barbara Czarnecka about her recent study on how moral judgments affect how we perceive risk. Woo! Hello, Teresa.
Happy New Year, Biz.
Happy New Year. I saw you last year. Yeah. Great to see you in the new year.
I know. Here we are. There was so much anticipation.
There was.
And now we're here. It's arrived.
Stephen swears he's just going to walk around the office, and every time he leaves a meeting, he's just going to be like, see you next year.
Oh, God.
I was like, good idea.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think
you're
I remembered.
You're an adult. You can make your own decisions.
I didn't get it together to say that to anyone this year. It kind of snuck up on me. Even though it was like much anticipated, then all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'll be writing 2016 on everything for the next 8 months.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I want to remind everyone that I had, thanks to my parents, I had 4 days and 4 nights vacation from my children over the break.
This is incredible. And we all want to know, did you do it right?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes,
wow.
I did it right.
That is because of experience.
Yeah.
You're getting really good at this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I had to get my headspace right.
Yeah.
And I did.
Good.
And it was crazy. I mean, it was crazy. Like, Jesse and I kept going, like, this is so crazy. We were just in awe.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't even know. I mean, it was just.
It's a lot.
It was so crazy.
What did you do? What was the best thing you did?
We were at home. My kids. So we'd gone to the cabin for Christmas with my family. And then my parents took the kids home with them to their house in Northern California. Jesse and I drove back to LA.
Wow.
And so we were in our own home, which was nice because we weren't off somewhere. We got to like be in our own space.
You in fact have not been in your own home by yourselves.
No.
Ever in that home.
No.
No.
Not really.
You moved into that home with Simon.
Yeah. Yes.
And pregnancy.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, the dogs were there, and they were cute, and, like, they got walks every day, which is, like, really nice. We went to the movies, we ate out a whole bunch, like, our fridge kept getting filled with leftovers from eating out, you know? We took a few days to, like, unpack from our trip, we didn't, like, bother to clean up right away or anything like that. We did like some hiking. We just like laid around.
And then towards
the end, I was like, you know, I'm going to feel really good when the kids get home if I can get some like cleaning done and really get stuff organize some toys, get like some books out of here. There was just like a lot of stuff that had accumulated that I'd been like looking at for like a year, like wanting to deal with that I hadn't. And so I was able to deal with a lot of that stuff. I mean, it was crazy.
Oh,
it was crazy. We didn't fight. We were joking going into it, like, oh, we're totally going to spend like at least one day having like a big, stupid fight.
Right.
You know? We didn't fight. We were just like really happy to be together.
Oh,
do you know
God.
What I mean?
Yes.
It was magical.
And then
my kids had such a great time with their grandparents.
Yeah.
And then they came home and they were happy to come home and we had missed them and they missed us.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just, I can't thank my parents enough for this.
It was really magical. Good job, you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Good job, Oscar and Simon, for like enjoying that time.
They did great. Yeah.
Everybody, that is an amazing gift.
Yes. How are you?
Oh my gosh. We were hit with the plague
over Christmas. Christmas Eve.
That's Katie Bell, unfair.
It was kind of a bummer. Christmas, leading up to Christmas, Katie Bell had like the runny nose kind of cold thing that I was like, you're fine. You're a trooper. You're not really sick.
That's like a winter runny nose.
Yeah, winter runny nose. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
And then Christmas Eve, Ellis just goes from like great to like crashing. But we, you know, get everybody to bed. Santa's coming, the whole nine yards. I'm up Christmas Eve every hour with him. He's just unconcerned. He keeps waking up half between.
Like feverish?
Well, he had no fever, but we kept giving him Tylenol because I was like, clearly there's like something's bothering him. It was like a mix of his night terrors and Santa Claus is coming. So it was like some sort of night terror mixed with a cold coming on, right? Yeah. And then he was sick for several days. Stefan woke up Christmas Day sick to the point where like halfway through the day, like at 2 o'clock, I just looked at him and I was like, go to bed.
Yeah.
Like I am the one who has like the zero patience for the like walking around looking sick.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine walking around looking sick myself, but like when Stefan is sick,
he'll just like go lay down and close the door.
You're not helping, right? Because I can't take care of you. So you're like, go lay down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he was out. Stefan was sick for like two more days. Ellis, you know, now still has the cough. They both still have the cough. And then I got it. Two days after Christmas, I got it. And I mean, Ellis was pretty much just like coughing directly in my mouth at times.
Yeah.
The drool, which now, thanks to you, it's clearly not teething.
Yeah.
It could be the sign of some sort of sore throat.
Yeah.
So I get it and I'm like out. I am every night, 7 o'clock. As soon as Ellis is down, it's the NyQuil and out and just did not. I think 2 days ago, around January 1st, I felt really great.
Okay.
And then I went to the Rose Bowl parade yesterday. I was like outside in the cold, windy weather, because a cold will make you sick. And then this morning I spoke up with the sinuses stuffed up again. So we've basically all just been like, so, you know, that was the holidays. I'm glad that
some years are like that.
Yeah, some years are like that. There was great unity, great solidarity on the One Bad Mother community. A lot of other people sick got the gift of sickness for the holidays. So I just was like, good. I'm happy that I'm done with it. I'm happy that I'm done with 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready for 2017 and to be well. Which I think ties nicely into what we're going to talk about today, which is our desire to be resolute with our resolutions.
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa.
Yes.
It's a new year. 2016 is what we just came out of. Now, I like to go back and listen to our previous shows on the resolution shows. So our first year, when we were doing resolutions, we spoke a lot about resolutions. Why are they this weird negative thing that we do? Like, they seem to come out of a place of like
I'm not good enough.
I'm not good enough.
I need to fix myself. Yeah.
And I thought the big insight that year was also no one's asking us to do this.
Right.
Because no one cares if you achieve
that.
No one's like, are you going to work on your posture this year, Teresa?
Right.
All right. So that was takeaway from our first resolution show. This year, last year, we decided to do some reflecting back on the year, as well as try and look at our resolutions to be more like, what are we looking forward to? Right? Let's resolve to look forward to something that may be personal, maybe a personal growth kind of thing. What are ways to just be even more awesome?
Oh, that's nice.
Right? That was a way to look at. We were so on it. Okay. So
it's also every year it's a time for us to talk about how little you've touched your banjo in the past.
Oh, guys.
Right?
The main point of this is to serve as a reminder that I have not touched my banjo. I continue to not touch my banjo, and no, it's not a metaphor. It's literally a banjo under my bed. Okay, so let's take a flashback to where we were last year in terms of what we wanted to do to make our lives better. Mm-hmm. Yours is in sort of two parts. There's sort of a setup and then the resolution. I think both add value.
Okay.
For our memory sake.
Okay.
Okay. So let's listen.
I would just like to say I have no recollection of
Teresa
this.
Teresa doesn't go back and listen to the show. She has no idea.
So this will be a surprise for me.
This is going to be good. All right.
But my kind of big one for this year, I guess, this is my resolution. So basically, I've never talked about this on the show before, I don't think. I have a weird middle ear tube disorder called patulous eustachian tube, which is where your middle ear tube, your eustachian tube, remains open most of the time or a lot of the time when it's supposed to be closed. Like most people's middle ear tube is closed except for like when you yawn or swallow for like a second.
You did talk about it some when you were pregnant because it really affected
Maybe
you
Maybe I did
you
talk
were pregnant,
about it
just briefly,
pregnant.
But yeah.
So the big thing that my ENT said that I could do is basically get it permanently closed and have ear tubes in my eardrums like for the rest of my life, which the way he described it to me just sounded like it would be a big hassle basically for the rest of my life and uncomfortable and might not work that well, blah, blah, blah. And so I kind of had resigned myself to there's nothing I can do about this.
Right. So the setup, it was that you have this ear problem and you had resolved yourself to living with this.
Yeah.
And then and you clearly, as people might have heard Teresa say, oh, God, do we have to listen to all this?
Yeah.
which may be predicting where we're headed with this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then the show, you talk at great length about why this may not be something you want to live with.
Yeah.
And then you wrap it up with...
I just decided I'm not just going to, like, sit around and be sad about this.
Right.
I'm going to, like, fight it.
Good
so
job.
That's going to be 2016. I actually have my, like, surgery appointment consultation later today.
Whoa.
So this is, like, happening.
Nice.
Yeah.
So... I realized when I was listening back on this, I have actually no idea if where this played out.
I mean, it's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this like actually makes me want to cry. No, I don't have anything to report. Like,
okay.
The surgery consultation did not go well. The doctor like strongly advised against doing anything.
Oh my gosh.
He promised to like look into alternate solutions. He pretty much never did. He's retiring and hopefully somebody better is going to take over. In the meantime, I got pregnant and there's nothing I can really do, but it's really bad.
It's still really bad.
It sucks every day.
Yeah.
It really, really sucks.
Well, I'm so glad I could bring that up.
Thank
and
you
play
so much.
Well, that was your resolution.
I know it's not your fault at all.
No, but I think here's the thing. Actually, I'm kind of glad we went through that because what I liked about re-listening to that early, like when I was home listening to it and even now, is that what inspired me so much about that as your resolution was just that you were like, no, I don't have, I'm actually going to try and figure this out.
Yeah.
And then the year happened. You have a doctor who wasn't very good at helping you figure it out and you got pregnant.
Yeah.
So that put everything on hold.
Yeah.
But I think that's sort of what happens with these concepts of resolution.
Yeah,
you know, like if you
totally
had like put this out in the universe in March,
right?
I wouldn't be digging through files trying to find
so true
it, right? Like,
yeah,
there's something inherently fucked up about resolution making, which is why we're going to do another show where we do it, because clearly this is enjoyable to go back and find these. There is something, when you realize that maybe you didn't. Don't worry, I didn't make mine either.
Yeah, but there
mine's
is
not causing me horrible, uncomfortable pain.
Yeah,
like when there's something...
it's not pain, but it is really, really frustrating and annoying.
Yeah.
No, it's there is something about. I think this actually comes full circle back around to like what we first talked about with resolutions, which is like, why do we feel like like, because it's the beginning of a new year, we have to, like, give ourselves an extra special job to do. Like, do you know what
it's
I mean?
Like really shitty to-do list.
Yeah.
That's like,
and this will come back and haunt you.
Yeah. We're like, all waiting to hear.
Like, we already know there's all this other stuff that you do every day.
Yeah.
And there's all this other stuff that you, like, have on your mind that you want to do. We're going to just, like, pick a thing. We're going to, like,
pick a thing.
And, like, just give ourselves this, like, weird guilt trip.
Challenge.
To, like, get something done.
Yeah. I mean, even the idea of saying we're going to make ourselves more awesome still suggests that we're not awesome right now.
It does.
Right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's better. See, what I did, I didn't do that with my resolution. That's what the problem is. Like, I feel like making ourselves more awesome is good. It's a good goal. And if there's no, like, end point, it's just, like, something
like
good
journey
to work
awesome.
On and, like, think about, you know? And, and can mean so many things.
Right.
But, like, the thing that I did is I just, like, picked a thing that's, like, mostly out of my control. And decided to conquer it, which is, like, really, like, worst case scenario.
But
do you know what I'm saying?
Sort of a reflection on pre-pregnant Teresa, when you were maybe feeling like, a lot of our show last year involved us being like, we're coming out of the fog.
Yeah.
Son. And we weren't, guys. We weren't. But we were still, it was like such a, like,
oh God.
Dumb thing to say. It's like, you know, being 15 and being like, I understand deep. You know, I'm really deep at 15.
Right.
You're not.
No.
You're not.
No.
Sorry.
You're 15.
You're 15.
Yeah.
You're inherently not deep.
Yeah.
And at where we were last year with roughly 2-year-olds and 4 and 7 year, 6 year olds, we were not out of a fog.
No.
Then we weren't. So
we really wanted to be.
It made us sound good, but we weren't. All right. Well, here, you can get a good laugh at this one.
Okay.
Let's listen to what my resolution was. For last year.
Okay.
Speaking of smug 15-year-olds. I think for me, I think my big resolution is going to be possibly not lying to myself about what I can achieve. You know, I'm a bit of a type A-er.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have lots of things happening at once. And I think what upsets me is when I can't achieve those things over the course of the time allotted. You know what I mean? Like, suddenly, you know, finishing a quilt for some friends was something I really wanted to do, but it was like just this, like, do it! The fun was out of it. The, like, cooking all these holiday treats, the fun was out of it. Because I only had a little time to do it. You know what I mean? Like, and not that I want to, like, get rid of doing things that I enjoy, but I have got to figure out how to sort everything else out so that I can then find joy even in these small acts of cooking something or making something or going for a walk without feeling that I am screwing up other obligations that I have. I believe you followed that up with the question of, how are you going to do that?
That sounds reasonable.
A reasonable question.
Yeah,
I didn't do that, guys. Just want everybody to know. It was like, I thought about it.
Yeah.
Seemed lofty and deep.
Yeah.
And then I just...
You overcommitted.
Struggled through the rest of this year like I always do. That's like an unattainable thing, too. Like, a little bit. That's like one of those things where it's like, I'm going to do this thing that I actually have little control
of. I'm going to change my personality. It's going to be no problem. I'm not sure how, but I'll just change my personality.
I have plenty of time to do some deep soul-building work while surrounded by 2 children, 2 cats, 2 fish, a snail, and my husband. That's... also unrealistic.
Yeah.
And then I look back and I'm like, no, I'm still like struggling to get stuff done. No, what I was essentially saying in retrospect was, no, I would have to cut all the fun stuff out. You know, like you're just like, but people are always like, slow down. And I'm like, but then I'm just, there's literally nothing happening. It's like you either go from like what you're normally doing all day as a parent and as a person with a job and as a person trying to maintain relationships.
Yeah.
To not doing anything. Like, that's the only kind of way to, like, because each thing, we've talked about this, each thing requires, you can't pull back on kids.
No.
I feel like we're at the bare bones anyway. I take you to school and I feed you and you know what I mean? Like, I love you and bathe you. And like, it's not like I've got him signed up for 30 activities.
No.
Just the basic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I need to have a relationship with my husband, right?
Right.
I need to like have a relationship with friends and people and I need to do self-care. So like, What was that?
So that's all enough right there. But then you do still like commit yourself to like a lot of extra stuff, which is what I think you were actually talking about. But that is also fulfilling to you on some level. So it's not like you're just doing that because you're like, well, I can't say no to that.
Well,
You're like, you kind of like doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I know. So like,
there's no answer.
I feel like it's been a long lesson coming that maybe we should just say fuck you to resolutions.
I'm ready for that this year.
Just,
I'm totally ready for
resolution
that this year.
Is to say fuck you resolutions.
Sure.
Because you know what, actually, if we were to reflect back on 2016, and I think we actually should take a moment. There's a lot of people saying things like, 2016 sucked for a variety of reasons.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure.
And
all of those reasons.
All of those reasons
are
valid and true.
Yeah.
But I would like to take a moment to say, I think we also had a pretty good 2016. We came up with the idea that we are getting really good at this.
True.
And I think that is the best takeaway from 2016 for the show.
That was a really good takeaway.
Because that's almost like the ultimate resolution a
it
little bit.
It actually is.
Am
You're
I getting
so right.
better at this?
Yeah.
That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
That's it.
That is so it.
Right?
You're so right.
That's it, isn't it?
Yes.
So just everybody, you're getting really good at this.
Yes.
Teresa's getting really good at this. I'm getting really good at this. Whatever this is definable to each of us.
Yeah, and depends on the moment.
Right, and depends on the moment.
Yeah.
There's no, like, I can do X, Y, and Z. It's not like Lent or something where you're giving up pickles for a month. It's like, there's no way.
Who gives up pickles?
I don't know. Some Catholic who's really into pickles. Some Episcopalian who really needs pickles. I don't know. Somebody may give up pickles. Somebody may have a pickle problem and needs to sacrifice pickles. Look, I'm just saying, everybody's their own person. All right. I think maybe when I was like 12, I gave up pickles
That's
or something
adorable.
For Lent, isn't it? It's adorable. I'm adorable. I'm going to strive to be more adorable this
year. Yeah, you're
year,
getting
guys.
Really good
I'm getting
at
really
being
adorable. Good at being Yeah. So, you know what? Whatever your resolutions were, if there's something that, like, A, possibly are really difficult to achieve, right? And they're not about just becoming more awesome in general. And no one cares if you're doing it.
Yeah.
That's really the big one.
Yeah.
Especially yourself.
Yeah.
And Teresa and I both look back on those and we're surprised by our resolutions.
Yeah.
I mean, really surprised by what they were.
Yeah.
And neither of us, I think, really care that we made those resolutions.
No. They're not, like, they're hearing like, that was not helpful.
Yeah.
To
same
of
here.
Us. Like,
yeah.
yeah.
It's like, oh.
Okay.
Whatever.
I guess that's what I was thinking about a year ago. Great.
So, 2017, fuck your resolutions. You're getting really good at this.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Blue Apron. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals.
Guys, we love Blue Apron. We get it. My mom and dad actually get it now. It's super easy to follow instructions. Almost all of it's like a one-pot sort of deal. And the ingredients are fresh and good. And it's a great reason to try new stuff, especially if you like to cook like I do. It really got me out of a lot of cooking ruts. Tuesday is not always spaghetti and meatball night.
You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/badmother. That's blueapron.com/badmother. Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9000. 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Genius fail time, Teresa. Genius me.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
Okay. So, actually, speaking of my debilitating middle ear tube... the only way sometimes to feel better with that during the day is to be horizontal. Mm. And so sometimes, like, during the day, I just kind of have to lay down for 10 or 20 minutes at a time. And a couple days ago, I was, like, having a lot of trouble with my ear, and I needed to lay down. And my kids had just come home, and I really missed them, and I was really happy to be with them. But I had to be laying down, and that was really, like, not... a very helpful or good thing to be doing with my 5 and 3 year olds. I just wanted to be playing with them, but I had to be laying down. So I was laying down and I invited Oscar to sit on the mommy bench. I was laying down on my bed and like behind me was my maternity pillow and like another big pillow and just like all the big fluffy blankets. So I invited Oscar to sit on the mommy bench, which was basically I was on my side and he just sat on like my hip.
Yeah.
And then I said like, oh, are you feeling comfortable there? Is that comfortable? And he's like, oh, yes. And then I just took his legs and flipped him backwards. And so he like fell in a big pile of pillows and he thought it was like the best, most hilarious, most amazing thing ever. And then Simon wanted to sit on the mommy bench, too. And so we just played this game that lasted, like, probably 20 minutes.
Whoa.
Where they were just cracking up the entire time. And it was so easy because all I had to do was flip their legs back. I was just laying there.
Yeah.
I didn't have to really do anything. And we had the best time.
Good job.
Yeah.
Excellent job.
Thank you.
I merged my children into the same room.
Oh my God.
And turned Ellis's room into a toy room.
Yay.
Because it's really too small to be like a play room.
Yeah.
But like,
that's where
guys,
you keep the toys. It's a toy closet.
Yes, the toy, basically, toy closet. His room, guys, was so small. And there's still a few things that need some tweaking.
Yeah.
But over the course of this week, with a slumber party in the middle of it, I did it.
Awesome.
And guys, it looks pretty good.
Cool.
They both love it.
Aww.
Ellis is like a whole, like now it's his room he can go into. And he has all this room. Like originally he like played in the den. Because that's basically the only place he could really play. Now he knows he can be in that room. And Katie Bell's really good about it. And like, I just nailed it.
Oh my God, that's so great.
And
that's so cute.
It is really cute.
Room.
And they really like it. And Ellis has like all these books he can see now because they're up and on bookshelves.
Yeah.
It is a game changer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm calling with a genius moment. A couple days ago, my husband and I and our 10-month-old were traveling to visit friends for the holiday. And it's about a 5-hour drive, so we knew we would have to make a stop halfway through for lunch and just to get out of the car and stretch. With a 10-month-old, we were also trying to find a place where he could get out and crawl around on the floor. Most restaurants aren't great for him to roll around. He just gets out of the car and gets strapped in the car seat. He's a pretty active dude. He wants to stretch his legs and play around and get his yayas out a little bit. And then it dawned on me, we should just find a public library in the town we were stopping in for lunch. We looked it up. They had a public library. We stopped there. It had a great children's room with toys and books and plenty of floor space, and nobody cared that we were just letting our baby roll all around and chew on things and stand up and pull books off the shelves because that's what they're there for. So that's something to find as the holiday season approaches. Traveling with little ones that need a place to crawl around safely, check out your local public library. Thanks. Everyone's doing a great job. Have a happy holiday season. Love the show.
Yeah, I thought this was really genius.
It's really genius.
Because, like, if you're going to kill, like, 30, 40 minutes somewhere to let your kids, like, walk around, especially if it's, like, cold weather and you can't go to, like,
a
stop or a park or whatever, That is so smart. And you know what? When we used to travel with Katie Bell, we don't go anywhere with Ellis. When we used to travel with Katie Bell, we would like look for children's museums.
Oh, uh-huh.
But I don't know why it never crossed your mind to look for libraries where yeah. we were. But like, all hail the public library, guys.
Yeah.
If you have not gone to your public library for whatever reason, it is the place. If you have got little kids, it is a heaven.
Yeah.
It is heaven.
Yeah.
Go to your library. Good job.
Good job.
I mean, really, that is a good job. I'm glad
really
you called
is.
That in. That
yeah.
was really nice.
Yeah.
Failures.
Fail. 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 Fail.
You suck.
Fail me, Teresa.
So last year we were going up to the snow in January and my kids didn't have like snow clothes. And so I just went ahead and bought them each like those bib coveralls, not coveralls, overalls, I guess.
Yeah.
And I like found them pretty cheap and I got them like a size up because I was thinking we'll be going to the snow more and, you know, we'll use these again. And
right.
so it's worth buying them. So then somehow I lost them after we used them. Like, I lost them.
Yeah.
I have no idea where they are. So even though they're, like, the right size now for this winter, I don't have them. And so I realized this before Christmas when we were going up to the cabin. I knew we were going to need snow stuff. And I mentioned to Jesse, I had gotten these things, but I can't find them anywhere. Like, they're gone. And so he went ahead and found more and bought, like, the kids each an extra, a new pair. And so, and then I was in charge of packing everybody
sure.
for the cabin, and I just left them at home. They were just sitting on the couch in the kids' room for like a week or
yeah.
maybe even 2 weeks because it was like, I want these out so I remember
yeah.
to bring them. And then at some point, I got sick of seeing them there and like shoved them in the closet. And then when we packed, I just didn't pack them.
Yeah.
And so we just didn't have them. We didn't have any, like, actual snow pants. So, like, we did sledding. We were, like, in the snow a
yeah.
lot. There was a lot of snow. And my kids had, like, good jackets,
yeah.
good gloves, good hats, like, boots.
Pants.
They had snow
yeah.
boots. And then they just had pants that were getting completely soaked
yeah.
and frozen legs.
Oh,
like,
baby.
Frozen legs. Like, pretty much instantly.
Oh.
And I just felt so stupid and so terrible because not only was I, like, subjecting my children to frostbite,
sure.
I also just, like, it was just, like, so many multiple
yeah.
fails on my part that led to that. Like,
you just had them stored right next to the swim diapers.
Exactly. That's exactly where they are. Yep.
Just keep those together.
We'll just keep them together. They'll just sit there until my kids
oh,
are 18
Teresa.
And they move out.
God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Those are, like, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So Katie Bell had a friend spend the night on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really fun.
It does sound fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Stefan and I were reminded our house was not set up for sleepovers. It's
oh.
just too open. It's too. We could just hear
you
everything.
You could hear everything.
And I don't want to hear two
right.
seven-year-olds talking all night.
Right.
It makes me bananas.
Right.
That's not the fail.
Okay.
Okay. The fail was it's time to order their pizza.
Uh-huh.
What do you guys want on your pizza? One, Katie Bell wants pineapple and onion. The friend wants...
okay.
It's delicious.
The it is delicious.
It is. The friend
cool.
wants chicken... The friend wants chicken and mushrooms.
Okay.
All right? So I'm going to do a half,
half
and half.
Half and half. There we
do
go.
Do half and half.
All right.
Okay. So I go online where I always order.
Yeah.
Half chicken, half mushroom, half pineapple, half onion. And I even go in and say, God, just want to make
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. And I am so pleased with myself because
yeah.
I have double checked it.
Yeah.
And the pizza arrives.
Yeah.
And it's mushroom and onion.
Oh, no.
And pineapple.
Chicken and pineapple.
And chicken. And like, it's so not right.
It's so
and
funny.
And I go, I was like, I can't believe they messed this up. And I go and I pull out my order. It's me.
Oh,
I
no.
clearly, I messed it up. And
no.
Stefan, thanks to the show.
Right.
Thank you, show. Stefan just walks by and just gives me the big pointy finger. And I was like, here's your fail for this week. And I was like, and you know, and the kids actually did all right. And they kind of.
Did they eat it?
And they both had like a bite and they're like, we've invented a new pizza. And then after like two bites, they're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
They're like, didn't want to eat anything.
Oh, no.
Whatever. They
all
don't.
Right.
Yeah, children that age don't need food. They just,
no.
they just feed off their own energy.
It's true.
And the brownies I then gave them.
Right. There we go.
Hey, this is a fail. My wife is in her first trimester of her first baby, and we're getting to that end of that first trimester, and I've been reading, you know, hearing health that she's going to get whatever, so I've been trying to, you know, pry on a little bit and, you know, send her daddy text and stuff like that, see if she's interested or whatever. Well, in my haste of trying to do that, one day my boss texts me, and then I go back to text my wife. I don't look at the name of who I'm texting, and I start sending sexy text messages to my boss. Needless to say, he has 5 kids, and he was okay with it and laughed it off. But I was the butt of the joke for about a week at my office. Anyway, thanks.
Yeah. Wow. Well, kudos to trying to send sexy texts to your pregnant wife.
Yeah, that's nice.
Very nice.
Really nice.
Really nice.
You did it wrong, though.
You totally
you
messed it up. Yeah, you did it. You did it wrong, I think, is exactly the way to phrase that. That is, there is a right way to do that and a wrong way to do that. And as Teresa so elegantly put it, you did that very wrong. So you're a hireable person and employee. And husband.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you, I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone. I love you, I love you.
One Bed Mother is supported in part by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They offer an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price.
Jesse and I have one of these mattresses. It's super comfortable. We're super happy with it. And also, I would like to point out, somebody was asking me on the Facebook group recently if there's any issue with intimate times, like whether that... Like, whether
it's good for intimacy.
It's good for that.
Sure.
And I would like to report that it's great. I think it's great.
Casper mattresses feature supportive memory foam for a sleep surface that's just the right sink and just the right bounce
there
for all
go.
Your intimacies.
There's a risk-free trial and return policy, so you can try sleeping on a Casper for 100 days with free delivery to the U.S. and Canada and painless returns.
The mattresses are made in America.
One Bad Mother listeners can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/badmother and using the promo code BADMOTHER at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply.
Teresa.
Yes.
Let's call a mom.
Great.
This week we are calling Barbara Soneca, who is a professor in the cognitive sciences departments at the University of California, Irvine, and the primary investigator in the Soneca Cognitive Development Lab. Most of her work to date has looked at how young children acquire number concepts, and her more recent work focuses on the development of social cognition as well as on adult moral reasoning and risk perception. One of her latest studies was No Child Left Alone, Moral Judgments About Parents Affect Estimates to Risk of Children. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, we are so happy to have you here. First, before we get into the study, I wanted to ask you a question we ask all our guests, which is, who lives in your house?
Well, I live in my house with my husband of 20 years and our two kids, our two sons, who are 17 and 11, and our two dogs.
Nice. We will not derail into a conversation about dogs, as we are up to do. First, before we get into the discussion, I wanted to take a moment because I am the type of person who likes to think I know a lot of things about stuff and then talk about them with great confidence.
That's why you're the host of a podcast.
That's why I'm host of a podcast. Let me confidently talk about something I know very little about, which is the premise of all parenting books.
So I
would like to give me sort of a brief synopsis of what is cognitive science? What do you do?
Oh, cognitive science is a field that kind of started existing in the 60s that was putting together cognitive psychology, which is the part of psychology that talks about thinking and memory and attention, brain science, neuroscience, and also like artificial intelligence. Kind of those parts of robotics that try to imitate human perception or human thinking. So there's a whole bunch of things that broadly have to do with thinking and the brain that get put together and are called cognitive science.
Awesome. Nice. But your focus has been to date a lot on kids.
Mine was cognitive development. So that's like the development of thinking, like how kids' minds get put together and how you learn concepts and how you start thinking like an adult.
Did that help at all raising when your kids were little? Did that help at all?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it's, one thing that's been surprising to me among all my developmental psychologist friends when we've had kids is we all thought we'd really enjoy being home with kids because we are developmental psychologists. And we're like, I study kids all the time. I think development is fascinating. I'm sure I will adore being home with my kids. And of course, it's super boring. Like being home with kids is like nothing at all like being a researcher. Like, my job as a researcher, even though I'm talking about development, is like I look at, you know, I design experiments, we collect data, I analyze the data, I write papers, I write grants, I teach classes. It's nothing like being home with a kid. Being home with a kid is just incredibly boring most of the time and frustrating and difficult. So I hated it. I was really depressed staying home with my kids when they were babies.
I wonder how much that has to do with the study. So let's talk about the study actually. So
I should say, though, I love... the older my kids get, the more fun I have parenting. Like, I think part of being a developmental cognitive development psychologist is like it's really cool to me to see them, to see their thinking develop and to see their concepts develop. And so the more they started talking and reasoning and puzzling things out and navigating the world, the more fun I had with it. So I'm kind of, you know, some people say, I just love babies. I wish they would stay babies forever. And I'm the opposite of that. Like, the older they get, the more interesting I find them.
Let's talk about the study. So,
all right.
So the study, No Child Left Alone, basically we're talking about how our society currently is reacting when a child is left alone, whether it's like a six-year-old on an iPad in a parked car in the shade while a parent goes to the ATM still in visual sight, or a 10-year-old at the park. Basically things we all remember doing as kids but now seem to border criminal because... Yeah. Da-da-da-da, we love to judge. Yeah. So I'm wondering, let's start with what led you and your fellow researchers to examine this, and really, what's wrong with us, and how frustrated are you with all of us?
I'm personally very frustrated, as I'm sure all rational people who are raising children in this environment are.
That's
great. In terms of the being frustrated thing, I feel like suddenly everyone around me has developed a phobia of flying on airplanes, for example, mm-hmm. and that because I don't share the phobia, like I'm in danger of being reported to police. You know, like mm-hmm. like somebody's going to see me getting on a plane with my kid and call the police and say, "Do you know she's getting on a plane with her?" You know, like it's a fear that is just not founded in fact.
Yeah.
It's relatively safe to get on an airplane, and it's relatively safe to let kids be unsupervised for short periods of time in, you know, places like parks and, you know, cars and stuff like that. And so the fact that parents can be that people are calling 911 and reporting people to the police, and parents are getting arrested and prosecuted for doing things that are, like, objectively speaking, safe, like acceptably low risk things, like taking an airplane ride somewhere.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. Like, it just seems nuts. So the way that's in answer to your question of how did I get interested or how did we start doing this study, I read an article in Salon, I think it was, by Kim Brooks mm-hmm. called The Day I Left My Kid in the Car or The Day I Left My Son in the Car, or something like that.
Yeah.
And she, it was very interesting, first person true story about she had been visiting her mother or mother-in-law. She had a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. She was going to fly home. She realized she didn't have any headphones for the 4-year-old for the flight. And, you know, she's going to be tending to the 1-year-old. So she needs the 4-year-old to be able to like watch a movie or whatever on the plane. So she dashed out to get headphones and the kid said, "I want to come with you." And she's like, all right, come on, you know, get in the car. And so he's playing on the iPad in the car. They drive to the store. And then when they get to the store, he doesn't want to get out of the car because it turns out he just gets to play iPad in the car and he wanted to come with her just so he could play on the iPad.
Right.
And so, you know, she's just got to jump in this convenience store and grab a pair of headphones, and she's looking at him thinking, he's going to have a massive tantrum. Am I going to, you know, pull the iPad out of his hands and pull him out of the car and deal with this? And he's already out of his routine. He's been at grandma's, you know, like, ugh. And so she said, you know, "We're parked right in front of the store. It's not a hot day. I'm going to be back in 5 minutes. Fine. Play on your iPad." So she went, she got the headphones, she came back. Of course, he's fine. He's playing on the iPad. They drive home. But somebody had like seen her getting out of the car, had videotaped the child being in the car without an adult, videotaped her license plate, reported her to the police. The police then charged her with contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Like, they traced the car and traced the, I think it was her mom's car she was driving, so they found her mom and found her and ended up charging her with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, which is totally
weird,
nuts.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have anything real to charge her with, because the laws don't say you can't leave a four-year-old waiting for 5 minutes in right. whatever state she was in. And it was just this, it was crazy. I mean, and what struck me about it when I read the article was like how everyone but her, it was, you know, those comedies like Green Acres, the old show where the guy, the husband of Zsa Zsa Gabor or Eva Gabor or whatever, he was kind of sane and everybody else was crazy. So he ended up looking crazy all the time.
Right.
Because they were all crazy and like all crazy in the same way. And so he, from our, you know, from the viewer's point of view, he seemed really sane and normal, but everybody thought he was nuts. That's what I felt like I was reading with this article. Like, her reasoning and her actions seemed totally rational to me. Like, she didn't place the child in any danger that is enough danger that you should worry about it, right? Like, you drive the car, you drive a kid around in a car, you understand there could be a car accident. But the chances of a car accident are low enough that you ignore them, because probably there's not going to be a car accident.
Right.
And similarly, it's not that there's zero chance of anything bad happening while the kid is waiting in the car. Yes, he could be snatched by an abductor, but the chances of it are so, so low that it doesn't make sense to organize your life around them, right? It's like being afraid of that you shouldn't go into the store because there might be a terrorist attack in the store while you're in there, or, you know, you should never go indoors because there might be an earthquake or something. Like, there are risks of things that are so small that it's only rational to ignore them. But all these people in the story had not seen it that way. Like, the people whoever videotaped her, whoever turned her into the police themselves, the prosecutor, the judge, like, all these people acted like she had done something terribly dangerous. And that just seems so bizarre to me, like, so strange. So you have to assume that they sincerely believed either that the child was in danger or at least that she had done something really wrong. But if the child wasn't in danger, what did she do wrong? You know what I mean? It was so weird. And so the more I thought about it, the more I thought maybe it's not that they actually, either they don't really believe the child is in danger, but they think she committed a moral violation, or somehow their estimate of the danger is being contaminated by their moral judgment, right? Like, they think she did something wrong, and that makes them overestimate the danger somehow.
Right.
So we designed a study to test that hypothesis, and we actually did, so we replicated it a bunch of times. We did 6 separate experiments with a total of a few thousand participants. And so what we did was we had people read short vignettes, short stories about kind of a situation kind of like Kim Brooks' situation, where the mom, for one reason or another, decides to leave a child alone for some short period of time in a relatively safe place. And what we varied was the reason that the mother left. And then people didn't know that. So each person would just read one version of the story. But what they didn't know was that, you know, maybe you read the version where the mom chooses to leave the kid alone for 20 minutes in the car because she has to do something related to work. But in another version that somebody else read, it would be the same kid in the same car for the same 20 minutes, but the mom was meeting her lover.
Way to go, mom!
Yeah.
I know. Go, mom. Or in another version, it was like she just stepped away from the car for a moment, but then she was hit by another car and knocked unconscious, and so nobody knew that the baby, so it was an accident that the child was alone in the car. And then we asked people afterwards, after they read the vignette, we asked them on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the safest or least risky and 10 being the least safe and most risky, you know, how much danger... What do you think was the danger of something bad happening to the child during the time that the parent was gone? And what we found was that people thought bad things were more likely to happen to children if their parents chose to leave them than if the parents got hit by cars and left them by accident.
Which is, in fact, worst. I mean, you like,
of course.
To me, like,
I mean,
it's more
logically,
upsetting. Yeah.
Logically,
parent,
you're better off with your parent not hit by a car.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That would be like the that would like derail me in this like vignette reading. I'd be like, oh, what happened to the mother and who's taking the child? Have they put together some sort of like, you know, legal document stating that somebody could take this? Oh, foster care. You know, you just go like down this whole path. And like, well, I'm like, 20 minutes to go get work. Like, okay. That's crazy.
And so that was the big difference was that if the mother left, in one study it was fathers, but if the mother left or father left unintentionally, then they thought the kid was safer than if the mother left on purpose. And there was additionally small effects about why they left. So if they left to meet their lover, the kid was in a little more danger than if they left to like do charity work or go to work.
In danger of having a new daddy. What? Sorry.
Yeah, it's so silly. It's so bizarre. And but in a way, it kind of parallels when you see these cases where moms are like jailed for, like there was, I can't remember where, a case in, I think, South Carolina where a mom who was 6 months pregnant who had let her two and a four-year-old or something wait in the minivan, which was air-conditioned, while she grabbed a coffee at Starbucks, and they threw her in jail overnight. Now, how does it benefit a 2- and a 4-year-old to have their mom thrown in jail overnight? Yeah. That's somehow better for them than being allowed to wait for 5 minutes in a car?
Yeah. All right. I have two questions on that. I have two sort of next questions. So the first one is, how did we get here? Because we are all people. I cannot tell you how many conversations. I have never had a conversation with somebody where I'm like, I was a total latchkey kid. I came home by myself with a key and took care of myself. I mean, like early. And like, if I was sick, let's say my mom came to get me from school, in elementary school, and I was sick, she'd put me on the couch, tuck me in, put on the TV, and then she'd run up to the store to get soup and Gator, like whatever I needed. And then she'd come right back. And, you know, my sister and I, we were at parks all the time. I mean, no one's ever been like, that was definitely not my life. Like, I mean, like, ever.
Yeah. And so, well, I'll tell you who says it's not their life is the people who are college students now.
Well, right. Yes, that's
my
true.
My students that I talk to.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true because we
are. So that's when it happened.
That it's somehow in those last 20-ish years.
So
like,
that's the big question that's really interesting to think about. It's like, what happened in the 1980s?
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of plausible things that people have suggested. I mean, what we showed in our study was just a little piece of what we think is kind of a feedback loop where people think the child is in danger and so they decide it's immoral to put the child in that situation. And then because they feel it's immoral to be in that situation, they overestimate the danger. So it's like you think it's more dangerous, so you think it's wrong, and then you think it's wrong, so you think it's more dangerous,
right.
And it goes kind of back and forth. But it is a question of like, what happened suddenly between the 70s and now. And I think there are a bunch of suggestions. So one is that as more moms were working, more kids were in care where somebody was paid to take care of them instead of just like their mom, kind of them being around while their mom was watching them. And I think when you're home with a parent, it was like you could, mom's maybe like talking on the phone and like stirring the spaghetti sauce and she's paying the bills or whatever and the kid's kind of running around and it's fine. But if you're in like a daycare situation or a after school care situation or with a babysitter, it's that person's whole job to be watching you.
Mm.
And so there's the idea that like the kids should never, somehow the babysitter isn't like paying the bills and making dinner and talking to friends on the phone, even though I'm sure tons of them were.
Yeah.
but there's this different standard if you're like in paid daycare, right? Like that you have to be watched all the time and more closely monitored. Also, there was a weird, the panic about missing children that got going in the 80s. I think what happened was that there started to be more divorce, and with more divorce, there started to be more cases of non-custodial parents grabbing kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents whose kids got grabbed by their former spouses who weren't awarded custody were really mad and were asking the FBI and the police for help, but the FBI and the police kind of considered it an internal family thing and they didn't want to get involved. And so the missing children, you know, the kids' faces on milk cartons and stuff, that seemed to grow. There was a group of parents whose kids had been kidnapped by their other parent, by their non-custodial parent, who were trying to get more publicity. And so they started this, like, I don't remember what it was called, you know, so National Center for Missing Children or something. And they started trying to collect data. And even though almost all the kids were taken by family members or runaways, by if they included runaways, like teenage kids who had run away, then they could get the numbers up really high and they could claim that like hundreds of thousands of kids were missing. Mm. The number who were actually abducted by people the family didn't know was tiny, like a handful, right. Like I think, you know, under five or something, that in one study that they tried to study in 2003, they tried to break down all these data and find out how many actual stereotypical like stranger kidnappings there were. It's very, very rare. But they could claim, the people who wanted to publicize it, if they counted runaways and they counted family members and of snatching the kids, then they could claim that lots and lots and lots of kids were being abducted, right? And so they could, right, like, get more press coverage for it. And so you got, like, faces on milk cartons, and you've got, you know, Anderson Cooper doing, like, missing children, lost
well,
and
yeah,
found.
I mean,
you know,
our 24-hour news cycle that we have that's really kind of come up in the last 20 years, and then, like, with the dawning of the internet and all the articles, right, that, like, there's just, you're inundated with it in a way, yeah, even if it's just one story, if that one, yeah, story runs for, like, 2 months or a year, yeah, it feels like there are kidnappings happening every single
all the time
day.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, fear is a big adrenaline rush, right? Like, local. Another thing that happened in the 80s was you got cable TV. So suddenly, instead of three news stations and, you know, an hour of news an evening, you had like 500 stations, you know, 120 stations, lots of local news, lots of cable news, looking for stuff to talk about all the time.
Well, plus TV show. I mean, you got, I was a, you know, I love a good crime show, but suddenly, yeah, you don't have three channels to pick a crime show from. You've got literally, yeah, TV shows that are that have an air of truth in them because they're
totally
in a police office, but the, yeah, storylines themselves are not true. But if, yeah, you watch people getting, you know, serial killers attacking every single day,
right,
you begin to think that serial,
right,
killers are everywhere.
Because, you know, our brains did not evolve in an environment with TV. Like,
right,
if we see,
oh,
people who look like nice people who have names and faces, and we feel like we're spending time with them, right? We see,
yeah,
scenes of them with their family. They're crying. They're talking about the terrible crime that happened to them. You know, some part of our brain that doesn't understand, like our prefrontal cortex, this new smart human part of our brain, understands that this is fake and these people are actors, and, you know,
yeah,
they're it's made up. But, you know, the reason it's still, it has emotional resonance, the reason we like to watch it and we feel happy, then there has to be a happy ending or else we feel mad and you know,
yeah,
ripped off, is because we care about these characters. Like, in some sense, it feels real to us. We,
oh,
feel worried when the fictional child is fictionally kidnapped, and we feel happy when the fictional hero saves the fictional child, even though we understand it's all fake.
Well, right,
right,
right.
What about the idea of, like, and I think this is related to what you just said, because there's this thing, like, that I do, like, if I'm watching a TV show where something terrible happens to the child, it's like, I make this decision in my mind, well, I'm never going to do what that parent did.
Right.
And there's
of course
this, that, like, I'll just mental note, I'll never do that one thing, and,
yeah,
therefore my family will be safe forever. We won't have
a problem.
Totally
agree.
Which
I
is, like, ridiculous. But the other part of that is this idea that even if the risk is so tiny, if it were to happen,
right,
it would,
right,
be so bad that I,
yeah,
can't take the, like, I can't take this risk, even though I know in my mind
yeah,
that there is like a 0.00006% chance of this,
right,
terrible thing happening. But if it did, so I can't take that chance.
Right. So people will say any chance is, any risk is too much. And, you know, even if it's a 0.000 whatever, it's still, I can't risk it. But why isn't that true about plane crashes?
Right.
Well,
or,
you know,
car accidents,
yeah,
or like the whole nine yards. But I want to jump on what Teresa say and go to something that you talked about as well in one of your other interviews. And was my second sort of thing when it comes to the data. And that was, one of the things that you had said in an interview that surprised you was how it was mothers who took the survey, like mothers who participated, mm, in the test, were the ones who ranked this,
mm-hmm,
as the most, like they would tend to respond 10, like
yeah,
the highest risk,
yeah,
which is absurd because like a 10 means like a shark is literally attached to your leg,
I
chewing
know
it off. But here's my question, and I wonder if you guys wrestled with this when you guys were coming out with sort of the results. And that is, I as a parent, I am a mom. and I'm pretty cool, guys. And but I am parenting in this particular day and age, and I found myself even being like persuaded in how I respond to another parent or another person in the world based on what I assume somebody wants me to say. So, for example, we all know 20 minutes of television is what they recommend. So I'll say, sure, I let my child watch 30 minutes of television, even though I let that kid sit in front of that TV for two hours some days. But 30 makes me seem cool, like I'm okay with bending the rules, but not so far. But, so like, I wonder if I were taking that survey, is there like a reason as a mom, what do we find ourselves in a place to make sure that we want to prove that we know it's wrong, even though we would do it, even though we left our kid to come take the test, right?
Like... Yeah, that's totally possible. I mean, that's people, when you ask people questions, they might answer for all kinds of reasons other than just answering what they really think is the answer to what you're asking them. You know,
like inherently as moms or as parents, I don't want to, dads have plenty of opportunity to lie to others to make themselves sound like they're doing it. They're great as much as moms do. But like, as parents, I feel like with all this added pressure, it has screwed up our ability to be honest about what we do as parents, which really sets a high bar.
Even, and it's self-perpetuating.
And it's self-perpetuating. Yeah. Just like I feel like we're stuck, as you call this loop, in this leaving your kids alone for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. Like, it just... We have just gotten ourselves crazy. Do you, has this, let me just, I don't know if there's an answer to that per se. So I'll move on to this, which is after doing
Well, let me just say the survey was anonymous.
Okay.
People never gave names. They didn't say anything about where they lived or anything. So to the degree that they weren't literally afraid of being judged or caught or anything because they didn't give any identifying information. But they might absolutely, as you say, they might be saying, I want to present myself as a good parent, and a good parent would never, ever, ever do this in a million years. A good parent would say that this was a 10 on the scale of 1 to 10, and so I'm going to call it a 10.
Right. Well, we internally have that discussion even having a coffee when we're pregnant. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we can't. I mean,
or
we,
like a glass of wine.
Yeah,
why
like,
would you take the risk just for yourself to have a
glass of wine?
What I think is funny about it is, like, when did we decide that being paranoid was the best possible parenting?
Well,
like, why, if you're sitting there thinking, well, how would a good mom answer? Like, regardless of what you actually think the risk is, if you're trying to answer what you think a good mom would answer, why would a good mom think that leaving a kid for 10 minutes is a 10 on the danger scale? Like, how does good mom navigate the real world if she can't tell the difference between real danger and not danger?
Oh my God, that's such a good
point. That closing
point.
Door could slide close on my son again.
Yeah, like, at what
store.
Point do you just say that's like clinical levels of anxiety disorder and you can't function?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, we may not be well right now as a society.
Well, I mean, I hope that you're right, that people are pretending to be more freaked out than they actually are, because I would rather think that people were pretending that they never let their kid be alone and actually letting their kid be alone than to think that they are actually, you know, living this, trying to live this crazy, unlivable situation where the child is never out of their line of sight.
I know. And then they go to college and they don't know how to, like, cut with scissors.
I mean, know, I, so, it, well, and the people who can confess, by the way, are people like me, who's, once the kids are grown up, you can be like, oh, yeah, hell, I let them watch TV all the time. They had so much screen time. Are you kidding me? Because once they're grown up, nobody's gonna like, go after you anymore, right?
God. Oh, don't. Hey, there's always tomorrow. Somebody can easily come back and hunt you down for letting your kid watch, you know, Gilligan's Island. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for doing the study, and have a wonderful new year.
Thanks. It was really nice talking to you. Happy New Year to you guys, too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Brainwaves, send a message, pick up the phone. When you icon.
The great questions of your life.
The great questions of your life.
Should you put ketchup on a hot dog?
Put ketchup on a hot dog.
Toilet paper over or under?
Toilet paper.
Star Wars, Star Trek?
Or Star Trek.
Fear not, my friends.
Fear not,
Mark
my
and
friends.
Hal always reach the definitive answer. Simply listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Pacific on Maximum Fun. Fun. We got this. Your better self is right around the corner. Namaste.
If you love podcasts, comedy, and creativity, and you're looking for some new friends to share them with, why not check out MaxFunCon 2017? MaxFunCon is a chance to get away from it all, spend a weekend laughing, and return inspired to create amazing things. Join us for MaxFunCon in Lake Arrowhead in June, or MaxFunCon East in the Poconos in September, and prepare yourself for one of the best weekends of your life. Tickets are on sale now at MaxFunCon.com.
Well, that was really interesting.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've kind of talked about this concept of people being insane when it comes to letting your kids be alone.
Yeah.
And the study is really fascinating, and you do start to, it goes back to that thing we talk about all the time, this judging. And I think it's a combo of this like moral judging. Mm-hmm. What would I do? What does society want me to think is the right thing to do? As well as the internal conversations we give ourselves mm-hmm. about what we think we're supposed to be doing and what's the right thing to do and what will other people think. It was fascinating. And I thought she and her team did a really good job laying out sort of what may be adding to this. So that was good.
Yeah, I found it super helpful to think about it in terms of those moral judgments.
Yeah, right.
Like escalating the risk, because it makes a lot of sense when you think about it that way.
Yeah, I for me too. Well, you know what else makes a lot of sense when you think about it that way? Listening to a mom have a breakdown.
Hey, this is a rant or maybe a fail. I think it's just a rant. So my almost 2-year-old has been sick all week, and I've been keeping him home with me, and I drive my daughter, my 4-year-old, to daycare and drop her off, and she's super excited. She loves daycare. She especially loves Friday, which is today, because it's show and tell day and all kinds of other stuff, and this is her last day before winter break, except she decided that she doesn't want to go today because, unlike the rest of the week, I am going to work, and my husband is staying home with the sick almost 2-year-old, so she wants to stay home with him, and I feel really rejected and like I suck and am the crap parent because she wants to stay home with him, and she didn't even ask all week when I was home. And when I said that to him, because I was sad and he asked what was up, he was like, well, you're always complaining that they want to, you know, sit on your lap at dinner and that they're always touching you and you never get any time alone, so maybe you should just decide what you want in life, blah, blah, blah. And I guess I should. I don't know. I do want time away from them. I am excited to be alone in my car, but I also don't want to be the not fun parent. Anyway, thanks for the show, guys. Bye.
Oh, man. This is a real thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, here's the thing. There is truth in feeling like, well, why doesn't my kid want to stay home when I'm the one who's dealing with the other sick kid?
That's straight up rejection. Somebody doesn't like me rejection.
Right.
Which is like from the moment we are aware of our surroundings and becoming social humans, that hurts.
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah.
Even though that is taking place in a universe at the moment where you are dealing with a sick 2-year-old, which is a lot.
Yes.
And is exhausting for you.
Mm-hmm.
And
physical.
And physical and draining. And like, if it was me and my child suddenly was like, I want to stay home with you, I would have been like, no, you're going to school. I can only deal with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when it swaps, so both of those things I think are existing in the same universe, right? Like, and then there's the thing I think that touched me the most was where her husband says, you know, so which is it?
Yeah.
Which do you want?
Yeah.
Which is an unfair question because, And we get asked that by our friends. We ask that of ourselves. Yeah. We ask that. I mean, that's like as soon as you start saying that parenting is hard, somebody's going to come out with, well, why'd you have kids? Or why don't you change your job? Or why?
Well, they're going to grow up so fast.
They're going to grow up so fast.
You should really appreciate this.
Right. Let them climb all over you.
Yeah.
Let them swing from your earrings and step on your boobs.
Yeah.
You know what
or
I mean?
That you're just supposed to feel one way about it all the time. Like
that's right. And you're what we all know to be true is that you don't feel one way about it.
Yeah.
You simultaneously feel 2 to 5 ways about it at the same moment.
All the time.
All the time.
Around the clock.
There are moments where you're having dinner and your child's sitting in your lap and you love it. No one remembers that one. People are going to remember when you're like, get off my lap.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe we should all start yelling, I'm enjoying you being on my lap while I'm eating. This is so
fulfilling and rewarding. I love the smell of your hair and the touch of your skin against mine.
Okay, maybe we should say that more. But people don't tend to listen to those either as much.
Right.
People want inherently to hear you complain about stuff. That's the stuff that sticks to us, right? So it is an unfair question, even if your husband, and I'm sure I don't think that you married a jerk. I'm pretty sure he meant that, like, oh, well, what do you, you know?
Yeah,
like,
well,
right,
you
like,
can't have it both ways,
right?
Or whatever, yeah.
But you kind of can have it both ways.
Yeah.
You can,
you're
like,
gonna
not
feel all the stuff.
Yeah, including feeling rejected.
Yeah.
Including wishing that, like, you could be home with both of them, and it's like a perfect day, right? And that they are all running away from your husband screaming, not with daddy, right? Like, and then tomorrow you'll be like, why won't they just spend time with daddy, right? Like, why won't they just give me some time alone?
Yeah.
These are all real things, and I just feel like it's an important call because it's super complicated. It's just super complicated, the emotional back and forth that we feel when it comes to our time and what we feel we are giving our kids and what we want back from our kids and the fact that it all exists at the same time. I don't think anybody gives each other enough credit for that tug of war that's happening all the time.
That's right.
So you are doing a really good job.
Yeah, you are.
You really are.
Good job.
You are doing a really good job. Everybody, what did we learn? I think this was a really valuable show.
Yeah.
I think our big
thanks to us.
Very rarely. Thanks to us.
Well, actually, you did have one really good insight.
And that was?
Fuck resolutions.
Fuck resolutions.
Yeah.
Today's big takeaway is fuck your resolutions. Yeah. We are not doing that shit anymore.
Yeah, we're done with that.
Next year, we'll just, I don't know, talk about something else at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
But it won't be about resolutions.
Nope.
I'll play that next year.
Okay.
We're also remembering that we're all getting really good at this.
Yeah.
And we're also all going to remember that we need to take a moment to think about what the risks really are with everything, because we cannot live our lives constantly worrying that everything we come in contact with or our children come in contact with is a 10. On a scale of 1 to 10. It is not.
It doesn't make sense.
It
life wouldn't
really
work that way.
Life would be really difficult. So everybody, you are doing an amazing job.
Yeah,
this is going to be a great fucking year.
Yeah.
We're going to kick the shit out of this year.
Yeah.
Also, I think we'd like to just take a moment and give a special shout out to all the people involved in the ever-growing One Bad Mother community, very specifically the people who are the admins of the One Bad Mother private online Facebook group. These guys do this because they want to do it, which is amazing to me.
It's a big job.
It's a big job.
And they're really good at it.
They're really good at it. And we want to say thank you to them, as well as to all the people who are adminning all the subgroups that are out there. Guys, the communities are so nice. They're so supportive. I'll throw the link up again on the public page so you can figure out how to become a member of the private online communities. It's worth it. Make sure you read the guidelines before you Yeah. Make the full commitment.
Yeah.
Because there are some.
Read the guidelines before you start, like, posting.
Yeah, yeah. We highly recommend that. That'll smooth journey.
Yeah.
Smoother journey, guys.
Yeah. And just thank you to everybody who's a part of that community, posting on there, commenting on there, you know, whether you're an admin or not. Everybody who's showing up with honesty and kindness and gentleness and non-judginess, you guys make that community what it is.
Yeah.
And it really feeds us and feeds our show as well. So we're really grateful to all of you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Teresa?
Yes.
You are doing a great job.
Thanks, Fizz. So are you.
Thank you. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. Got to low down mama blues. You know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, Lindsay Pavlos, our engineer, our husbands Stefan Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
Do you have a genius or fail moment you'd like to share on the show? Then leave us a message at 206-350-9485. Full-on rage-induced rants are also welcome.
Well, daddy and baby, fuss and fight, got low down mama blues. Oh, said daddy and baby, fuss and fight, got low down.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.